Folks, I'm here with Sonia Shaw. She's a writer, writes about science, medicine, international politics. We've talked to her about her book, Crude, The Story of Oil. Also, recently, The Body Hunters, Testing New Drugs on the World's Poorest Patients. She has an upcoming book this summer called The Fever, How Malaria Has Ruled Humankind for 500,000 Years. Sonia Shaw, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you had an article up in Ms. Magazine talking about, well, specifically the malaria issue and a unique cure by someone speaking at the one of these TED lectures. And I'm sure a lot of listeners are familiar with the TED series. It's lots of new innovations in science and technology. Talk a little bit about this new malaria invention.
Well, it's sort of like a Star Wars system. And it actually was inspired by the Strategic Defense Initiative, so the old 80s Star Wars system, but you'd put it in your house, and it would sort of detect the wing beat of insects flying around, figure out if it's a mosquito, if it's a female mosquito, because of course only female mosquitoes actually bite people, and if it is, it would send this laser to zap it, and it would zap it to, mid-air, and it would kind of be aerosoled, I guess.
Right.
there'd be like this little noise and it dies. And so you'd have these lasers sort of going all over the place in the interior space wherever you set this system up. And you need, to create it, the inventors used a Blu-ray disc and a CD player and I think some parts from a laser printer. And they could put this thing together with those, and plus a few months of supercomputing power from their in labs.
So the perfect thing for malaria-stricken countries who have access to all of this high-tech equipment, right?
Oh, right, exactly. I mean, when I was in Malawi studying malaria and talking to people about malaria there, I mean, we went to villages where there's no cars, there's no bikes, there's no roads, there's no water, there's no electricity. I mean, there's these very beautiful bucolic little villages, but you go there on foot and you look into these little huts that are built by hand, and there's not even any furniture.
Wow, unbelievable. And so did people take this invention seriously? Or was it people just sort of, I mean, the idea that they're going to be firing off lasers all over your home to get mosquitoes seems not only far-fetched, but comical.
It does seem comical, but he didn't present it as comedy. It was presented as, that the current technology we have to control malaria is not perfect, which is true. We use insecticides in bed nets, and we use insecticides sort of to spray on people's homes, and that can have environmental effects, which is true. We have drugs. They're not fully effective. We don't have a vaccine. So, he's right. We do need some new tools, or we need to do better with what we have anyway. So he had a really flashy video to show this thing off, and he got a lot of press for it. And people said, this is maybe something that could be used in clinics. Maybe not every sort of home in Africa could have something like this, but clinics could maybe have it. Hospitals could maybe have it. So it was actually received, generally as a serious invention. I mean, these are cutting edge technology. It's not something that's going to be adopted right away. But my point is, even going in that direction is, just totally missing the point.
Right, that there are, obviously screens and these sort of things. There are things that have shown to be effective in battling malaria. Obviously, we're far from wiping it out, but there are some things that are fairly effective. And doesn't this sort of grandstanding just sort of distract from that?
I think so. I mean, I think it sort of gets back to this whole fascination Americans have with technology. Mm-hmm. So we see a problem and we think, okay, we must need a new invention. We must need new technology to solve that problem. But, for many of these other many problems that we already have, we know the technology. We're not using it. I mean, we had malaria all over this country. We had malaria all over Europe. Well, we don't anymore. And it was gone before World War II. So before, we had all this high technology stuff. We got rid of it by, ending poverty, ending rural poverty. We got rid of it by building better houses, by better drainage, better roads, all these things sort of decreased the contact between people and mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. It also made us wealthier. So we didn't need anything really high tech to do it. We just needed the political will to actually put, you know, put pretty simple measures into place.
So really, that's what it is. It is about political will more so than technologies at this point.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. I think anyone involved in a malaria fight will tell you that. You know, at bottom, it's about political will. We know how to do this. Mm-hmm. We've done it in many places. I mean, it's even been done in Central Africa in the 1930s, you know, when big mining companies went to Central Africa and they were not able to, you know, function at all because there was so much malaria. And this is, again, pre-World War II. We didn't have, you know, synthetic drugs and all of this high-tech stuff. And they were able to control it by building good roads, by building clinics, by prompt treatment, by screening houses. You know, it works. It's just, it's kind of boring, I guess. And it takes money, and it takes political will to actually start mm-hmm. to do that kind of stuff.
So what inspired you to put together a book like Fever to really focus in on malaria? And you say in the book it's been around for 500,000 years?
Oh, yeah, at least. I mean, there's good evidence that we actually evolved with malaria. So we've had it since we were a species, and our ancestors before us had it, and they still have it. You know, chimpanzees and mm-hmm. apes have malaria. All kinds of creatures have malaria. There's birds, there's some lizards, there's all kinds of species actually suffer malaria. It's a very successful pathogen.
Mm-hmm. And is it's exclusively passed on by mosquitoes, or are there other means that malaria is transferred?
No, it's only mosquitoes, and it's actually only a certain class of mosquitoes, so not just any species of mosquitoes. So there's a class of mosquitoes called Anopheles, mm-hmm. of which maybe 70 specific species of Anopheles carry malaria, of which probably only a dozen transmit the most of the world's malaria. So they're, you know, we know a lot about these creatures. We know what kind of water they need to, you know, nurse their young in, that they lay their eggs in. We know where they like to rest. We know what they like to feed on when they're not taking blood meals. We know how they find us. We know what kind, you know, in what scenarios and environments they actually take their blood meals. So we know a lot about these creatures. And there's been lots of studies showing that just by sort of managing the environment in different ways, we could do a lot to minimize these particular species of mosquitoes, and thus minimize mm-hmm. malaria.
Mm-hmm. So, and as you point out, there are parts of the world where humankind has been quite successful in wiping this sort of thing out. It's just a question of, again, it comes down to the political will.
Absolutely. I mean, it's sort of like this problem that affects lots of other diseases too, where they're diseases of poverty mm-hmm. in the end.
Mm-hmm.
If you lift people out of poverty, you're not going to have these diseases anymore. You know, or they're going to be just so much rarer that it's going to be a lot easier to control just with drugs and prompt treatment. But getting people on board to say, okay, we have to start, you know, we have to start affect a better sustainable development in these countries. Of course, you know, some people are doing that, but when the political will to actually solve a specific problem comes because, you know, these charitable impulses. Okay, this is one thing. Let's take on this one thing. We can raise money for bed nets for malaria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's do that. And so we have more momentum. We're able to get the funding, get people in place, get people excited about, okay, we're going to do this one thing. We're going to get lots of bed nets, and we're going to take them to Africa, and we're going to distribute them, and this is going to actually make a difference. Well, yeah, it does, but people are doing that for 5 gazillion different diseases and different problems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what if we took all of that together and said, okay, let's actually start to get to the fundamental problems, you know? The fundamental problems are safe water, electricity, good roads, clinics, schools, you know, mm-hmm. the sort of the really the rock bottom fundamentals of making a society where people can be healthy and well.
Do you think it's possible to completely eradicate a disease like this?
I actually do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not a majority view. Mm-hmm. Some people think, well, we're always going to have some malaria with us because it's just, you know, we're finding now actually that some malaria, some of the worst malaria that we thought only fed on humans, actually also preys on apes. Mm-hmm. So gorillas have it. So if gorillas have it, you know, I mean, even if we eradicate it completely in humans, there's going to be this reservoir of animals that are always going to have the parasite. And so, you know, there's always going to be that risk that a mosquito is going to bite a gorilla who's infected and then bite us. So mm-hmm. if there's those reservoirs around in the world, then people say, okay, you're never actually going to get rid of it completely. But that might be the case. But we certainly can reduce it as a major cause of death. I mean, right now, up to 1 million people die of malaria every year.
Wow.
And that could be almost entirely wiped out. I mean, malaria could just be a childhood illness that you always would recover from, like, you know, a cold.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there ways to sort of protect or immunize yourself to malaria, or is it just a question of trying to just go after the mosquitoes and control it that way?
There is some immunity that you can gain to malaria, but mm-hmm. the problem is, to get that immunity, you have to suffer through many episodes of malaria,
okay.
some of which might kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. That's what's happening in African countries where there's lots of malaria. That and so most of the mortality from malaria is little kids, is kids under two,
mm-hmm.
because they're not making it through that gauntlet of those first few episodes. I mean, a kid by the age two in some African countries might have like 12 episodes of malaria in their life. And if they can make it through that and survive, then malaria is probably not going to kill them because they've acquired enough immunity. The trouble is, a lot of them aren't going to survive. And that's why we have such heavy mortality from this disease.
How many people get infected by malaria in this day and age? How prevalent is it?
Between 300 and 500 million people.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
And the amazing thing about that, Jeff, is this is a disease it's completely preventable and it's completely treatable. And we've known that for 100 years. And still, oh. 500 million. I mean, it's remarkable.
It's stunning. Yeah, actually, because again, it goes back to political will. But what's the political advantage to allowing a disease like this to thrive? It could affect almost anyone.
Yeah, it could, except it doesn't, because you know, we have the good drugs. So, like, if you or I took a visit to Cameroon,
mm-hmm.
you know, we would go to our doctor first, and we would get drugs. And we would take those drugs. You take one a week, mm-hmm. you know, or one every day, depending on what you get. And you're almost completely protected from malaria. And even if you did get infected, if you got prompt treatment, which you would, because mm-hmm. you would spike 104-degree fever, you would know to go to the doctor, you would get treated promptly, and you would be fine, you know? So we can protect ourselves. The problem is, in a lot of these countries that have a lot of malaria, the way they experience it is different than the way we see it as a disease. I mean, we see it as this horrible killer disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is. But for people who live with it all the time, it's sort of a familiar disease. It's sort of like how we would think of the flu, where, you know, we all live with colds and flus, and we're not scared of them, even though millions of Americans die every year from the flu.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't think of it that way because we're so used to having flu. You know, if your kid has the flu, you're not going to necessarily rush them to the doctor, and you're definitely not going to take all kinds of precautionary measures to avoid flu. I mean, you might wash your hands more, but you're not going to, like, wear a face mask, for example, which would be highly effective. I mean, you wouldn't get, you know, you wouldn't get these flu viruses if you wore a face mask just during the 6 weeks of flu season. But nobody does that because, you know, it's the flu. It's not worth it because we are used to this disease. Well, in a lot of countries in Africa, if you look at the medical anthropology, that's how people see malaria, too. And when you think about it, it makes sense because there's so much malaria infection that death is actually really, really rare. There's just so much malaria that those deaths actually add up to nearly 1 million people. But, you know, 99% of the time you get malaria, you're going to be fine.
Wow. but it's just, so it's a question of just the way the numbers line up, that it's so widespread, even though only a small percentage of people die, it's still a huge number of people. Because
exactly.
it's so prevalent. Wow. Are there any, obviously you mentioned, I've heard about some of the campaigns for more nets, mosquito nets and things like that. Is that, is that an effective approach where we're at now? It's all these individual sort of philanthropists and groups trying to organize this, or what do you envision that we need in terms of organize to really take on malaria worldwide?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, bed nets work. Mm-hmm. They reduce mortality by 30% or something like that in clinical trials. So mm-hmm. it is something that works. But I think the reason why it's so popular as an intervention right now is because it's easy for us to do. It's mm-hmm. very easy for us mm-hmm. to raise money, to get, you know, to say, okay, give us $10, we'll buy a bed net and you will save a life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good fundraising appeal. Bed nets are very lightweight. They're very easy to distribute. You can put like a whole bunch of them on, you know, the back of a motorcycle and go into a very rural place and distribute them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy for us to do this intervention, which is good because, you know, Westerners are really spearheading a lot of the money and movement to actually do something about malaria in some countries. So, you know, it's not unreasonable that we're picking something that's actually easy for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, look at it on the other side. How is it actually working on the ground? Well, in some places, people use them. In other places, you know, the usage is really low. People use them to catch fish. They cut them up to use as wedding veils. They make the adults sleep under them instead of the kids, and the kids are the ones who are most vulnerable. They wash them so the insecticide comes off. You know, there's just all kinds of problems on the ground in actually getting people to use these. And I think what that gets back to is the social experience of malaria, the way they think of it. I mean, sleeping under a bed net is really hot.
Mm-hmm.
If you get out at all at night, then you've basically, like, you know, disrupted the whole protective
right.
effect. If your leg is sticking out, you've disrupted the whole protective effect. And you have to do that, and night after night, you have to sleep under this thing. You have to tuck it in. You have to, you know, get in and out. And in a lot of these places, it's very hot. It's very humid, and this impairs, you know, wind coming through, breezes coming through to cool you off. So, mm-hmm. you know, how much energy are people going to do to sleep under these nets when they don't think of malaria as something that is as deadly as we think it? I mean, it goes back to this idea of the face mask. I think it's a good metaphor that, you know, say a bunch of Kenyan scientists and philanthropists said, you know what, you Americans are suffering way too much flu and colds.
Mm-hmm.
It is constricting your economies, and we're going to help you. It's so simple. All you have to do is wear this face mask, you know, just put it on the kids, and they should wear it for 6 months. And you're going to save so much money, and you're going to, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to save all this illness in your society. And if these outsiders come and tell us this, we're going to be like, what are you talking about? You know, like,
right.
that does not make sense for the cost benefits of how we experience this disease. And I think it is sort of similar in some African countries. Now, it's not to say that people can't go in with bed nets and do education and do demonstrations and really work with local people to say, look, this is a good idea. Like, let's really try this. And that does work.
Mm-hmm.
But you're sort of going on, you know, you're sort of fighting an uphill battle. Like, it's different than saying, let's go to these countries and say, okay, what do you want to do about this problem? And how can we help you? You know,
right,
who are we empowering when we're doing this? We're saying, this is simple for us. We're going to just give it to you. You better start using it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So,
right.
You know, I think there is some paradox there.
Interesting. When is the book, The Fever, when is that going to be available for the listeners?
In July.
In July it'll be out?
Yes, but it's available for pre-order on Amazon if anyone's interested.
Well, I hope you'll come back in July when the book is available and talk a little bit more about it.
I would love to.
All right, great. Sonia Shaw, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for taking on this topic. And good luck on this next book. We look forward to speaking to you again about it.
Great. Thanks,
Take
Jeff.
Care. Bye-bye. Very cool. For more great interviews like the one you just heard, tune in to www.thejefffarriasshow.com. Podcasts are free. Don't miss out. We're having some great conversations here at www.thejefffarriasshow.com. Peace.